It is the 3rd of April, and we're continuing. Bonds. Yeah, boring old bonds. When are we going to start with stocks?
Yeah.
Would somebody tell him where? You know, no, don't bother. Don't bother.
We did stocks already, I think.
I'm not quite sure. You never quite sure. Yeah, you probably did miss it. Okay, but first, and so chapter 17 is due today. The assignment ratio is very. You didn't have to get all of them. You were here on Tuesday, weren't you? But you didn't get one either? Pass a few of these back. See if anybody needs them. Pass them back. So the ratios are very straightforward. If you didn't get all of them, that's okay. Contact me. We're only down less than 2%. Hey! And look who's doing best. The folks we didn't even... Well, Wells Fargo's doing well, but now DuPont. But then it gets uglier and uglier. But we'll see. And you want to change anything? Or sell anything?
No.
No? Hang on to them? Okay. All right. Let's get back to this guy. We were at, not 34, 24, 25. Okay, yeah, here's where we were, 25. We're going to go through the individual. We'll try to go through this quickly. Unless you have real quick questions, I won't belabor the point. As I said, the book does a really good job of putting you to sleep. I mean, covering bonds in excruciating detail. But first, we need a good joke. Anybody got a joke? Did I tell you about the guy with the little red hot sports car? I told you about him, right? Right? Battle of the Sexes jokes? Yeah, I did, didn't I? Yeah. The pipe and the cop. Did I tell you about poor Mrs. Wiggins? Well, you were taking the test. I'll tell you later. They've been married a long time. And she was called to the hospital because her husband had a serious heart attack. So she races to the hospital and she's... Where's my husband? The surgeon comes out, and she's covered in blood. And she says, Mrs. Wiggins, I have very bad news. We did everything we could, but your husband's dead. He's gone. And she says, he's gone? And the surgeon says, yeah. And that's when you're snickering. I know it's a little, it's nervous laughter. But she's in shock. You know, he's gone? And so she sits down. Well, about 20 minutes later, she gets up and walks over to the nurse's station. Says, where's my husband? And the nurse looks at her and says, Mrs. Wiggins, I have very bad news for you. Your husband's dead. He's gone. And Mrs. Wiggins says, he's gone? And she goes and sits down. Well, she does this about two or three more times, right? And they figure, oh, wow, we got to do something. So they call a social worker. And he runs down and he's in charge of the situation. I'll take care of this. He goes over to Mrs. Wiggins and says, Mrs. Wiggins, can I call you a cab? Is there anybody that can help you? You can't drive. Obviously, you're in a state of shock. You can't stay here all night. Your husband's dead. He's gone. They've already taken his body to the mortuary. And Mrs. Wiggins said, no, I'm all right. Don't worry. I just like the way it sounds. You haven't been married yet, for a long time, right? Okay. You didn't like that one? You like that one? I like that. It's my favorite joke. The problem is trying to say it without laughing. I'm always laughing when I say it, and people go, okay, something's not right. But they don't trust me anyway. Did you hear? I had a real tough time getting on my seatbelt this morning in the car. Well, I drove my motorcycle. I had a real tough time getting my seatbelt on, but then it clicked. Okay. Treasury bonds and notes. I know. They just get worse and worse. Treasuries. The granddaddy. So what we're doing is we're going from the least riskiest now to the riskiest. For the safest, surest. Is the United States government going out of business, folks? Don't answer that question. It depends on who you talk to. And there is a tremendous amount of politics surrounding the debt and the financial influences of the economy and the government. And many people think it's they call it a Ponzi scheme. But the government is not going anywhere anytime soon. And we discussed the difference between notes and bonds, and yours truly and many others will just use bonds interchangeably. Don't confuse treasury bonds, treasury notes with treasury bills. Remember, treasury bills were short-term instruments. They don't pay interest. Well, they do, but you buy it at a discount, and then it matures at a higher level. But they're what? 1 month, 3 months, 6 months. They're less than a year. Notes and bonds are a year or greater. And then a very popular one right now with many people, not with everybody because they're not paying very well, are these TIPS, Treasury Inflation Indexed Obligations. And we'll discuss these in more detail on the next slide. What happens is the principal is adjusted upward each year by the inflation rate because, for the most part, when you're a bond issuer, a bond investor, bond investor, a bond holder, inflation is your nightmare. That's what keeps you up at night. And then agency bonds, Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac, these are not direct obligations of the United States Treasury. And so technically they don't have the same gravitas, the same weight as treasuries, but they're considered very safe with almost no risk of default. And what happened for decades is that people would say, well, yeah, don't worry about Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac, Ginnie Mae. It's backed by the United States government. And the politicians would always go up and say, no, these are private entities. We are not going to backstop these. I know the Congress sponsored Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac decades ago to help people with a home ownership. But we're never going to bail them out. yeah. And so in the 2008 real estate crash, turmoil, Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac were caught up in it just as all the other home lenders were. And so now, dear students, as taxpaying citizens of the United States government, you are proud owners of Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac. Because when the organic matter hit the ventilating device, the government stepped in and said, okay, we'll backstop them. Do we as a government normally want to get in the business of business? Do we normally want to be competing in the private sector? No. But in this case, it really has worked out very well for the taxpayers. We have made tens of billions of dollars since they've turned the corner. And now Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac are paying these billions of dollars of dividends back to the taxpayers. And the Congress is going, okay, what should we do with this? This is not something we want to continue. But anytime somebody has a proposal, any congressperson or senator or the White House has been kind of quiet on this, letting the Congress take the lead, of course they get hammered. Everybody believes it's broken, but how to fix it? That's the problem. And we'll see as we go along the next few years how they're going to extricate themselves from this situation. Let's go. Come on, sweetheart. Move it. Oh, sorry. I went too fast. Okay, there are the TIPS. With many people, especially it gets into politics, the Tea Party and the folks who believe the government is way too big. When the Federal Reserve Bank dropped interest rates and flooded the system with money, many people believed and still believe that inflation is just around the corner. It's only a matter of time before the dollar is worthless and you know, all those bonds you bought, forget it, they're going to be worthless. Well, the Treasury and others, but these are the most famous, have created these inflation indexed obligations, TIPS. They're a type of treasury security that provides protection against inflation. Because you get paid an interest rate, like all bonds, you get paid interest twice a year. But what happens is the par value, the face value, is adjusted upward each year to keep pace with inflation. All right? So you get your interest payments. Right now, they're nothing. They're literally paying almost nothing. But every year, the par value increases. However, the IRS says, excuse us, even though you didn't get that money in cash, the IRS says you have to pay taxes on that because now you have gained some value. Your bond is worth more. And they don't want to wait until you sell the bond. They want it now. They want their taxes now. So a lot of people put these into retirement accounts, and you don't have to worry about them. Does that make sense? Very popular. But personally, if you look at what they're paying now, it's next to nothing. So I wouldn't want one. But that doesn't mean some people won't. Now, here they are, folks. These are the mortgage-backed securities, asset-backed securities, securitized collateralized securities application, debt applications. They go pass-through securities participation certificates. They go by various names. But here was the idea, and this is not just Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac, but they were the biggies there. The idea was to take mortgage loans, but not only mortgage loans. They use them for other types, and pass through those interest payments and those mortgage payments, those principal payments, to investors. A million years ago, you'd go down to your savings and loan, and they had money to lend because people would put it on deposit, and they would lend you money for a house. But they would hang on to the loan. You would make your payments to the savings and loan or the bank or the credit union, and they would accept that money, and that would be their investment. But along came Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac. They weren't the only ones, but these are the biggies. And they said, look, we're Fannie Mae, we're Freddie Mac. We've got tons of money. We get it. Where do we get it from? We'll discuss that later. But sell your loan that you made to that local homeowner. Sell it to us. We'll buy it from you. And what you can do is turn around and make another loan. And you get, you're in the business of making loans, you get the commissions and all other kinds of great things that you get to charge homeowners. And we will take 1,000 of those, or 10,000, and we'll bundle them up into bond issues, mortgage-backed bonds, mortgage-backed securities. And then we will sell them all around the world. You understand what's going on? The process is called securitization. I think it's on the next slide. And Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac just got huge. They are still now responsible for around 70% of all home loans. So chances are, when you get a home loan, your credit union or your bank or mortgage company is just going to turn around and sell it to one of these entities. Now, you don't see that. You still send your check every, it's all electronic now. You still send your mortgage payment to the company that made the loan. Sometimes not. Sometimes they turn around and sell it to somebody else, but to do the loan processing. But eventually it makes its way into these huge pools of mortgages. You make sense? Make sense? And these are the bad boys that drove us in down. Because while housing was going up, 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 everybody was happy. Hey, you're making tons of money. Go, they're giving away free money. All you got to do is run down there and buy a house. And in 6 months, it'll be worth 30% more, 20% more. And you only had to put down 10%, right? I mean, some of you are laughing. Did you live through that discount?
My house is right when the market crashed.
What? You?
When the market crashed is when I finally got my license.
That's the perfect time, isn't it?
Yeah.
Then you realize you're not invincible. You understand what it's like. It's the people who get in there right as it's ready to come up. They're the ones who think, oh, man, I can't do anything wrong. And then all of a sudden, so you learn the hard way. So in the past, these two entities, along with others, they weren't the only ones. You might have heard of Countrywide. That was a private institution. Have been very successful. And they are now, actually, I should change this because they're actually not in distress anymore. They are actually generating tons of cash again because the housing market seems to be, we'll know for sure in 3 years, stabilizing. And this process is now used not just for mortgages, but it's used for many different streams of income. It is called securitization. And it is another tool. Now, many people will paint it with a, you know, they'll just say, oh, this is horrible. Well, you know, anything is horrible. A hammer is a great thing if you use it to build your dog a doghouse, but if you use it to pound somebody over the head, yeah, it's not so great. But this is not going away. The process of transforming lending vehicles such as mortgages into marketable securities. But it can be done with any debt or any asset. The success of these mortgage-backed bonds spread into asset-backed securities. So bank loans, credit cards, leases, patents, stocks. And you might have heard of a gentleman by the name of David Bowie, yes? Yes? You've heard of David Bowie. Well, in the 1980s, he was reinventing himself. He's done it several times. From a glam rocker into, I don't know what you would call him, but just a, you know, a very successful artist. Movies, songs, certainly, concerts. And he went to the investment community and said, hey, I'm going to issue Bowie bonds. And these bonds are backed by me, my ability to earn income as an artist. And it was a very, by bond issues, I think it was $55 million, which sounds like a lot of money, but in bond issues, that's, you know, that's a small amount. Usually bonds are, you know, $100 million, billion, those kind of things. So I guess it wasn't that small, but the investment community said, all right, we'll do it, we'll buy them. And sure enough, the bonds all paid back, paid interest, paid securities, paid their principals back. Have you heard of REM? The band REM, they did the same thing. They did the same thing. So pretty interesting. Wouldn't it be cool if you could say to the investment community, hey, you know, I make money. Will you lend me right now $200,000 or $500,000, and I promise over the next 5 years to pay it back based on my ability to earn income? You don't like that idea? No? Well, it worked for him. And the bonds, when I originally heard this, I thought, oh, I hope he doesn't get into trouble with this. But no, he did. He paid everything back, and good for him. So they're called structured investment vehicles, collateralized bond obligations. Make sense? Yeah, okay, good. Now, munis, next group. The next group is a muni bond. Muni bonds are very cool for high net worth individuals. Why? Because these are tax-exempt. IRS doesn't like it when you say tax-free. Okay, you can say tax-free, but the IRS doesn't like it. They are debt securities issued by states, counties, cities, other political subdivisions, water authorities, bridge authorities, are tax-exempt. Why? Because the feds can't tax the states, and the states can't tax the feds. Oh, by the way, treasuries are exempt from state taxes. You don't pay state taxes on those. And these are exempt from federal taxes because they're part of the Constitution. Okay? The feds can't tax the states and the states can't tax the feds. But if you have any capital gains, remember the seesaw, if you have any capital gains, no, they are not tax exempt. And some, I don't know how the Congress or the IRS weaseled their way in, but some muni bonds are not tax exempt if you are subject to the alternative minimum tax, the dreaded alternative minimum tax. So you'll see some mutual funds that will, municipal bond funds, that will advertise the fact that they are AMT tax free. We don't buy any bonds that are subject to the alternative minimum tax. Very popular with individual investors, high net worth, high income. And some are insured, which is normally a desirable feature. But what happened in the 2008 crisis is that some of these companies that had been insuring muni bonds also got into the mortgage-backed securities market, and those companies are now gone because when the organic matter hit the ventilating device, they had nowhere near enough reserves to pay back those bonds that had gone bad. There are basically, well, there's three types. I'm sorry, I should say. The two big types are general obligations and revenue bonds. Revenue bonds. GO bonds, general obligation bonds, normally thought to be less risky than revenue bonds. Because general obligation bonds are municipal bonds backed by the full faith and credit and taxing power of the issuer. So no matter what happens, they've got to go raise taxes or whatever to pay these bonds. Muni bonds that are revenue bonds require the payment of principal and interest only if sufficient revenue is generated by the issuer. So when the Coronado Bay Bridge was built, those bonds that were used to raise the capital, the money to build the bridge, were contingent on the ability of the bridge to collect enough revenue from people crossing the bridge to pay the bonds. If they hadn't, then what normally is supposed to happen is the bondholders don't get paid. But that's, in practice, what usually happens is somebody rushes in and makes them whole. Have you heard about the South Bay Expressway? Yeah. You hear what happened? I could have told them before they built the darn thing. This is California. You know, you live back east, there's toll roads everywhere. But here, I ain't paying to drive. I'm a Californian. How many people actually use the South Bay Expressway? Raise your hands high. Come on. How many people will drive 10 miles out of their way not to pay $3? Come on, raise your hand. See, I told you. I knew it. And that's, we're Californians. And they didn't believe me. Well, they didn't listen to me. And sure enough, they didn't get enough people using it. And so, some kind of sweetheart deal on the contract. It was an Australian firm that built it and operated it until they weren't making enough money. And now who owns it? Sandag. San Diego Association of Governments. We do, the taxpayers. And what did they do? They lowered the price, right?
If you have
Fast Pass. If you have Fast Pass, they lowered, but not much. $3.50 down to
$3? $2.50 for the whole thing. And like $1 if you have Fast Pass to go for like Telegraph 2.
Okay. And then the special tax bonds. These bonds are associated with some special tax that the voters of a certain area have approved. For example, the Prop A and R bonds that you may have heard of. We talked about these a little bit on Tuesday, right? The voters of the South Bay said, yeah, Southwestern Community College, we like you. We want you to be able to rebuild and build up the campus. And then there's all kinds of hanky-panky going on. You know, I love my job, folks, but when it comes to that administration, I keep my back to the wall and my head down low. So, I'm sorry?
Why?
I'm sorry? You like drama? Well, I like drama, but not when it affects my paycheck, you know? Did you see that many of the governing board and some other people in the administration were indicted and charged and pleaded guilty to misdemeanors? They didn't plead guilty to felonies. Just pick up the Southwestern Sun. I know you don't want to read it, but it's actually a very good newspaper, and they have been chronicling what's going on with the... Yeah. I mean, the one guy even looked like a mafioso. He gives us all Italians a bad name. Aliotto. Do you remember him? I mean, he even looked like a mafioso guy. He looked like my brother. Okay, anyway. All right, what are the tax advantages to muni bonds? Well, they are free from federal income taxes. And so what we need to be able to do, and we'll do this in Chapter 10, is compute the taxable equivalent yield. It's not a hard computation. If purchased by investors in that municipality, then they are not only free from federal taxes, they're also free from local taxes. So if you buy, as a Californian investor, if you buy a California muni bond anywhere up and down the state, you don't pay state income taxes. Very, very desirable feature for those in the higher tax bracket. And as we said, capital gains, if there are never exempt. Now we're down to corporate bonds. Corporate bonds. How are we doing? Not bad. Corporate bonds. Out of these three, normally the least desirable, the most riskiest. And even within these are pecking orders. There are secured bonds and unsecured bonds. And some of you from the 121 class will remember the secured credit card. Home loans, car loans, some furniture loans are secured by those assets. If you don't pay your home loan, they take your home. Unsecured loans are basically just the full faith and credit of the issuer. if they don't pay, you've got to go after whatever you can find. And so it's true at the corporate level, only, you know, a whole lot bigger. Airplanes, railroad equipment, any real estate. And then within those bonds are pecking orders, senior and junior bonds. And the same thing is true for... Now, I have a hard time saying this. I've heard people say debentures and debentures. I'm not sure exactly which one it is. But there are debentures, and then there are subordinated debentures, which means they're down on the pecking order from the debentures. And then some unsecured bonds are also income bonds that require that enough income generated is generated to pay for the bonds. All right? Okay, cool. Now, zeros. So these are the three biggies. Right here they are. Treasuries, munis, and corporates. Zero coupon bonds are any one of the three. Actually, well, hang on a minute. I don't want to get ahead of myself. The Treasury has never issued them, but some very enterprising people on Wall Street made some Treasury bonds that looked like zero coupons, and we'll talk about those in a second. Wasn't me. Okay, remember the coupon payment, right? Clip the coupon. So what would a zero coupon bond be? Exactly, a bond that doesn't pay any interest. It's like a short-term security. You buy it at a discount, and it moves as you get closer to the maturity date in value up to the maturity value. So instead of receiving the interest in cash, the bonds simply accrue. That's the word we use. I don't know if you like it. Grow, accrue. Ask any accountant. They'll know what that word means. In value until maturity. So if you had a 6.25% bond for 20 years, you would pay about $300, and then in 20 years it would be worth $1,000. After 10 years, it would be worth $550. What are the disadvantages? Well, these things are very sensitive to interest rate swings because you're not getting any income. But if you plan to hold on to it for the maturity, what do you care? You don't care. Here's the kicker. The IRS says, ooh, you didn't get any money in cash, but your value, your bond is now worth more every year. We want you to pay interest on that. You see, you understand? Thanks a lot, guys. Can't you just wait? No, we want it now. Give us our money now. And so what do people do with these? They put them in their retirement accounts, and then you don't have to worry. Or if it's a muni bond, it's exempt from taxes anyway, so you don't have to worry about that. You understand? Exactly. So they're often used in tax sheltered accounts or in IRAs. Now, as we said, where is it? Yeah, I took it out. But the Treasury has never issued zero coupons. But in the 1980s, some enterprising folks on Wall Street talked to the Treasury first. They said, look, do you mind if we buy a bunch of Treasuries and then reissue them in two different forms? One that just was the interest payments, and the other one that was just the principal repayment. And the Treasury said, we don't care. You do what you want. So they basically came out with zero coupon bonds that were Treasury bonds, but they weren't issued by the United States government. There were Treasury bonds behind them, but what the company did is they stripped off the interest payments, and they sold the interest payments separately to investors, and they sold the zero coupon bonds that resulted from just the repayment of the principal. And I just love it because you know what they called them? Strip tees. Strip tees. You don't like that? There's a bit of trivia that you might amuse your friends and family with. And they ask, hey, I just bought a strip tease bond. Okay, fine. Okay. Now, the last group, and this just refers to, so far, never referred to the Treasury, are junk bonds. That's the nasty term. Distressed is another nice term. Non-investment grade. Sometimes you'll hear people say high yield as a nice way of saying junk or high income. Traditionally, this was reserved for bonds that were in distress. Nobody wanted to issue junk bonds because that just wasn't done. Well, in the 1980s, a certain company called Drexel Burnham Lambert, you might have heard of them, they're gone, but they were issuing bonds from companies that just had no business issuing bonds. These companies were really small. They would normally arrange financing in much different ways. But the idea was, look, these companies deserve to be able to raise capital in the bond market. Sure, they're going to have to pay a higher interest rate, but hey, they're willing to do that. Well, some of them were shams. They weren't real. I mean, they were real companies, but they had no intentions of using the money to build out the company. They were using it to do insider trading. You remember the movie Wall Street, and then they made a remake of it. But the character Gordon Gekko, Michael Douglas, right? Michael Douglas played it. It was based on the guy who was in Drexel Burnham Lambert. His name is Michael Milken, and he and another gentleman by the name of Ivan Boesky were doing this scam. And one of the companies they were using was Vagabond Inns. Have you ever heard of Vagabond Inns? They're based here in San Diego. Vagabond Inns is a small chain of motels that they were going to go nationwide. Oh, never had many plans. They took the hundreds of millions of dollars from the bond issue and started doing insider trading. They had people on the inside, people on the outside doing it. And Milken served 18 months and was generally considered to have wound up with $500 million after all was said and done. So would you serve 18 months in prison for $500
million?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I think so. Okay. Very high risk, but often offer the opportunity for large capital gains as well as high income. And the interesting part of these things is they tend to follow the stock market more than they follow the bond market. Why? Because most all of them are corporate bonds. There have been times when munis have been junk, have been rated junk. But normally they're corporate bonds. And so when the economy does well, these companies are generally considered, they'll be able to make their interest payments and their principal repayments. So they follow the stock market. If the economy does poorly, the stock market's going to tank. But often the bond market goes up or it doesn't go down as much as the stock market. But junk bonds are going to get hammered. So it's never been the case that the Treasury used... My apologies. They got it? Junk bonds? So when you hear junk, you can say, non-investment grade or distressed. You don't have to say junk, but that's what everybody uses junk. And then foreign bonds. It used to be that people just stayed away from foreign bonds. But now more and more investors are saying, no, we have to think globally. We need to invest outside the United States as well as inside. Many countries and companies for decades would issue their bonds in dollars. They would, because it was so attractive to get capital, the money's in the United States, so let's issue these bonds, even though we're Argentina or some other country or some other company outside the country. We will promise to pay back the interest and principal in dollars. So they had to take the dollars, convert them to their currency, use the money, and then convert it back to pay these things. But it was so desirable for them. You don't see this as much. It's still out there. But most all bonds that you would buy outside the United States are foreign pay. So that means you buy a bond in Mexico or in Europe, you're going to get paid in that currency. Well, that was tough for many decades. But now more and more brokerage firms have international brokerage accounts that allow you to keep dollars and yen and pesos and euros so that you can buy and sell securities and get paid in those currencies in your brokerage account. And we talked about the currency fluctuation, right? You probably don't remember some of you, but I want you to remember this because you need to know this. What happens if you buy something in Mexico and the dollar goes down? What happens to your investment? All the things being equal, and they never are, theoretically, your investment goes up. If the dollar goes up, your investment goes down. You have to remember that. Well, because of the relationship of the dollar and the peso. The dollar goes down, now those pesos are worth more. So that investment is worth more. But what's happening with that investment? That's a whole other story. Maybe that investment's going sour, but all the things being equal, and they never are. If the dollar goes up, now it takes more pesos when you convert back into dollars. So you have to remember that. I'm sorry? Oh. Yeah.
Isn't it the same thing like for us? Because we're getting dollars and the dollars is going up. We're investing in dollars and we're getting more pesos for our investment. So we can put more to buy more pesos. So it's the same thing kind of for us.
Well, that currency is very, very subtle. You say it's great for the dollar to be worth more, isn't it? Because that means we can go to another country and buy more. But at the same time, it makes it more difficult for our companies to compete against other countries. Because now their currencies you have to use more of their currency to buy our products. And so what some countries do is they'll try to knock down what some countries will do, they'll try to knock down their currency to make it easier for their companies to export abroad. That's what China has done. They've held the yuan. I don't know if I'm saying it right. They've held it lower than the general consensus, because they're a communist country. They can do that. Most capitalist democracies say, no. We want our currency to be able to float against other currencies to compete. But at the same time, they could say, well, we're thinking that it might be a good idea for the dollar to go down. We're thinking it might. It's called talking down the dollar, or talking down whatever currency there is. And this is the problem that Europe is having now. The countries in the lower part of Europe that really do need to devalue their currency can't, because they're part of the euro. So they can't. They can't devalue their currency. The euro is held throughout Europe. And they keep a pretty darn, they're not letting it go down. It's going down on its own, but it's come back up. Do you think the dollar is going to go up or down over the next 5-10 years? Most people think down. And for a long time, some people think it's going to become worthless. Against what? What space agency? What, you go to Mars or someplace? I thought this not because of our manufacturing, but because of our oil imports. Because we were importing so much oil. But lately, what's happened? We're importing a whole lot less oil, and over the next 5 to 10 years, depends on who you talk to, some people believe that we may become oil independent. That's a tough stretch. But if that happens, and we start exporting this stuff, the dollar is going to go up, I think. Doesn't mean I'm right. So we'll see. We'll see what happens. But that would be really a big change. And that's the only thing that's constant. You know that, right?
What do you think about Mexico?
Change. what do I think about Mexico? I like Mexico. I love Mexican food. I like popo and ixi. No, I'm sorry. About the peso?
Yeah.
It'll probably stay a little bit on the lower side than what it... Remember it hit just a few years ago? Well, actually now 6 years. It hit 10. 10 to the dollar. And then during the crisis, it went up to 15. But... in the past, when the United States had a crisis like this, Mexico would go on life support. But Mexico actually held up fairly well throughout the financial... fairly well. Anybody want to disagree with me? No? You don't have to agree with me. But I'm thinking Mexico will probably stay about where it is, maybe go up a little bit, but the dollar is going to stay strong. So I doubt if Mexico will get... I don't think the peso is going to get back down to 5 at 10 anytime soon. Probably stay around 13, 12. Doesn't mean I'm right. Because what's Mexico doing? Yeah. They're trying to attract more foreign investment in their oil sector. And they're building out their infrastructure. And if you go down to Mexico, there are new roads and plants and equipment. I mean, they're doing pretty good. I mean, you compare them to the United States, okay, it's not a fair comparison. But if you compare Mexico to most of the rest of the world, they're rich. You understand? Compare them to the Dominican Republic, folks. It's not a fair comparison. So Mexico, we tend to poo-poo Mexico, but they're pretty strong. Okay. And what do most people do for foreign? They do a global bond fund, right? They do a mutual fund. Okay, now bond ratings. That's not bad. We're almost done. Okay, letter grades. In the 121 class, you learned about the credit scores that you have as an individual. Well, bonds have credit scores, and they don't use numbers. They use letters. The bluest of the blue, if you will, or the creme de la creme, is triple A. And then it goes double AA, triple B, double BB, triple C, double CC, and then D. No F. Okay. And then if they, you know, if they want to show that they're a little bit better than double A, they'll put a plus there. If they want to show they're a little bit less than A, they'll be A minus. Anything BBB or above is called investment grade. Once you get down to BB or lower, you are non-investment grade, which we know means, what's another name for non-investment grade? Junk, right. Anything below BBB. There are many agencies, actually, but the two of the biggies are Standard & Poor's and Moody's. And I like to think of these as the idiot lights on your dashboard. You know the idiot lights? Supposedly they're a whole lot better. But when the oil light comes on in your car, what do? Put a piece of tape over it and just keep driving because your engine's already toasted. Well, that was 20 years ago. Supposedly now, if the engine light comes on, immediately stop. You know, you're running low on oil or something like that. What?
None of us does
a productive thing to do. So we just keep driving. Put a piece of tape over it because your engine's going to... The same thing is true here. In the wake of the 2001-2002 corporate scandals, the rating agencies were caught completely off guard. They didn't downgrade Enron and WorldCom until they were practically in default. They were investment grade. They were both BBB, but still they're investment grade. And then all of a sudden they're in default. They went from BBB down to C or D. They are again being called to task because of the mortgage-backed bond crisis. These securitized bond obligations, these mortgage-backed securities that were based on liar loans that people were making, the optional adjustable rate mortgages, were rated AAA by Standard & Poor's. And so people around the world were buying these things thinking, hey, they're AAA. That's as good as the United States government. And it turned out that the people who were making these loans, many, not all, but many people making these loans, were just making them because they wanted to get into a house that 3 years ago was $300,000, now it's $500,000, and 3 years from now it's going to be $800,000. So what do I care if I can't make the mortgage payment? I'll just sell the place and make $200,000, $300,000. And then they screwed up again, but this time they almost brought down the economy. And boy, did they get raked over to coals. But the change? No, nothing changed. So here it is, folks. The highest grade, the gilt edge. And in 2011, the United States government lost its AAA rating. What? Yeah, Standard & Poor's. The others didn't follow. But Standard & Poor's said... And it had nothing to do with the economy, folks. It had to do with the fact that the two parties, the Democrats and the Republic rats, the demagogues and the Republic rats, can't talk to one another. They're always yelling at one another. So that's the reason they gave. And then anything below BBB is speculative. That's another word. We should have used that word, speculative. And then by the time you're here, it's too late. You know, it's too late. Forget it. Okay. So they also then add a plus or a minus. Doesn't it kind of silly? Isn't it kind of silly to you? I mean, it reminds me of eggs. What's the difference between grade A and grade AA eggs or grade B, grade BB eggs? I don't know. They all look like eggs to me. So, any questions on that? Because we're going to take a look at some examples. Bond trading is very difficult for retail investors. The trading volume is often thin, and bonds trade over-the-counter, meaning you've got to go find somebody who has these things. Bond traders normally trade in the $100,000 range. If you are coming to the table with $2,000 or $1,000, can I buy a bond? Geez, forget it. We're just going to go away. We're not interested in you. You saw the one thing, $25,000 minimum. Investors use banks and other entities to trade bonds. There's a magazine, it used to be a newspaper, but now I think it's all online, called The Bond Buyer. The exceptions are the Treasury. The Treasury, which you took a look at treasurydirect.gov, treats every single investor the same. Whether you have $100,000 or $1 million or $1,000, you get the same price as everybody else. Pretty cool, don't you think? That's treasurydirect.gov, and you've already taken a look at that. Quotes. It used to be even worse, folks, but they still haven't made it the way they should. They should just put the price of the bond. No. What they do is they put percentage, and they don't put the percent sign. So instead of $972.50, you see 97.25. You're supposed to know to move the decimal point to one to the right. And that's all you have to remember. 97.25 is a bond quote for a bond selling at a discount. A bond selling at a premium would be quoted at over 100, and a bond selling at par would be quoted at 100. The bond thing on Yahoo has become really unusable. So I've been using FINRA, and then somebody else had sent me a link, and it's on my website, Bonds Online or something like that, Bonds. But this, you can't trust this guy anymore. And the company that's behind that, I sent Yahoo, I don't know, maybe half a dozen emails, never got a response, six emails. I finally sent an email to Value Bond, it's called, and they sent back and said, we know they're screwing up. We've been trying to get them to fix it too, and they haven't been able to do it. But we can't, they're just paying us for the quotes. We can't tell them what to do with our quotes. They do what they want with them. And they've really screwed up. So another example of Yahoo Finance page going down the toilet. Okay, and that's chapter 9. So we took a look at the one bonds, right? We took a look at the Poway bonds, right? As I remember? Okay, let's now take a look at Ford. Okay. Go back here. Somebody, Gerardo, would you hit the lights? So on your assignment, chapter 9, is to do some bond quotes. So you could use Bonds Online. Don't use Yahoo anymore, folks. You can't trust it. And then FINRA's. FINRA is the, I think they're actually using somebody else's, I think they're using Morningstar, but FINRA is the Financial Industry Regulatory Authority, and they have two pretty good bond pages, bond quote pages. I think the better one is the Advanced Search page. But make sure you choose corporate or municipal, because if you try to look up Southwestern Community College bonds and you choose corporate, you're not going to find them. So because they're muni bonds. But in the middle of the debacle, and I didn't show you this. Did I show you Ford's bonds?
No.
I didn't. Okay. In the depths of I'm about to get rid of that. How do I get rid of that? Okay. In the depths of the Great Recession, I had the forethought to hang on to these things. Usually I would just delete them every semester. I said, oh man, this is too good to be true. And I wish I would have saved the GM ones. Oh boy, they were unbelievable. But this was when the, do you remember when Ford, Chrysler, and GM went to Washington to beg for loans and money? The first time they went, they flew in their private jets to beg for money. The second time they went, they took the bus. Do you remember that? I don't know if you remember that, but when they flew in their private jets to beg for money from the government, and boy, didn't the media pick up on that. So the next time, they had a bus that drove them there. What? Think for a second, right? But they don't. This is the world they live in. When you're an executive at a company that way, you get treated like royalty. You're always in a limousine. You get driven around. Some people don't like it. The guy who runs Ford right now is a genius. And when he started at Ford, he actually came from Boeing. His name is Jim Mullally. And he, when they started at Ford, they tried to do the same thing. Here, Mr. Mullally, we'll take you and pick you up at your home and drive you in the limo. He said, no, don't. I'm driving to work. I want you to give me a different Ford car every month. I want to drive every single Ford car within the next year or so. And they said, okay, Mr. Mullally. And within months, he said, this is wrong. This is very wrong. We need to change this. Because you get into a BMW, you know you're in a BMW. Right? You get in a Honda, you know you're in a Honda. You get in a Toyota, right? Anybody into cars? I'm not that much into cars, but I understand what he's talking about. And he said, you get into Fords, they're all different. We need to make a single experience across the our Ford cars. And he did lots of other good things. But here they were, folks. This is the depth of the depression, the recession. What are they selling for? $580. You move it to the one to the right. These are bonds that originally sold at $1,000. And notice, what's the rating?
Triple C.
Triple C. Junk. You with me? Yeah, bad. Not good. The coupon rate is 7.7. But because investors have dumped these bonds, they are yielding 13%. Because you're not paying $1,000 to get $77 a year. You're only paying $580. When do they mature? 2097. Notice that they are non-callable. Because if they were callable 4 years ago, because interest rates have fallen farther below than 7.7 or 9.98, Ford would have refinanced them. But they can't. They're non-callable. They have to pay these investors 7.7% until 2047, until 2097. Oop. Oh, well. Those are not Ford bonds. That's Ford County, Kansas. I should just wipe that out. Yeah, they're muni bonds. They're muni bonds. So you see what's going on here? Remember what Benjamin Graham said and Warren Buffett? Buy when all the people are selling and sell when all the people are buying. And Sir John Templeton, the time of maximum pessimism is the best time to buy. But it's also the hardest. Ford was going to go out of business. GM and Chrysler did go through bankruptcy. The GM bonds were selling for $80 and $90. And GM went bankrupt. Ford didn't. Ford took every dime they could beg, borrow, and steal. They even hocked the Ford emblem. The Ford emblem, you know, the Ford, they put that into, like, saying it to a pawn shop. So that they would not have to take any money from the federal government. And sure enough, people would walk into a Ford dealership and say, I've bought Chevys for 40 years and I ain't never buy another government motors bond in my life. I'm going to buy me a Ford because you didn't take any government money. And Mulally's a genius. He knew, they knew, that if GM and Chrysler had gone under, if they hadn't got the bailout, Ford would have gone under. Why? Because of the suppliers. Because they don't make the everything on the car. They make most of the car, but not all of it. They don't make the catalytic converter. They don't make the starter motors. They don't make the airbags. They don't make the refrigerators. The air conditioners. The refrigerators. And so if the suppliers like Johnson Controls and who's a Lear Sigler and all these other companies had gone, Bosch probably wouldn't because they're based in Germany. They would have stuck around. But if those companies had gone under, Ford would have gone under too. Pretty cool. If you're into business and you like case studies, you should really look that guy up, the guy who runs Ford, because he is a bit of a genius. Okay, so that's March of 2009. Let's go 6 months later to October 2009. What have the prices done? Yeah, right? We're still, people were calling the end of the world, but things are not as bad. The market stabilized somewhat. In fact, by that time, the market had gone up about 20%. Still, CCC and the yields have come down. 6 months later,
maturity too, it changes, right?
I'm sorry, maturity's staying the same.
No, wasn't it?
2047.
Wasn't it like
that one's not in this group here. See, here's the company that I talked about, Value Bond. We'll see them again. Don't worry. We'll see those bonds again. There's the 2097 bond. And look now the prices. Some of the prices are over 1,000. And what's happened to the rating? It's gone from CCC to B. And that's only a year and a half. Not a year and a half, a year and 3 months or so. June 2010. Now let's go to October 2010. All of them are now over 1,000. All of them now are selling for a premium. The time of maximum pessimism is the best time to buy. Cool? No? And look, they're now BB. One more step, and we're out of junk status. So let's now skip over. That was October. Let's go to March of 2012. There's still BB. Prices are still over 1,000. Let's go to March of 2000. Yeah, still BB. Forget that. And then March of 2013. Look at what's happened. They are no longer junk status. Now Ford is investment grade. And look at the prices. So what's this? October 2013, in 2009, you've gone from $580 to $1,260, $1,400. Not bad, huh? Yes, Vanessa.
How has GM been doing, like, within the past couple of months?
Within the past couple of months? I don't know. Anybody? Theirs wasn't as dramatic. Because what happened with GM is that you went through bankruptcy. So the bondholders were paid, I'm not sure exactly how much they got, but it wasn't much, you know, whatever percentage of the dollar that they got. The stockholders got nothing. The stock became worthless. And it was then held by the Treasury. The Treasury owned it, and so did some of the Canadian government, and then the Canadian Auto Workers Union and the United States Auto Workers Union, UAW. They all had pieces of GM. Since then, the Treasury has sold off all of its part, and the Canadian government, I think, has sold off their part. And I think, I'm not sure if the unions have sold off their part yet. But those are the people who got the company in bankruptcy. And it has emerged from bankruptcy, and they're actually doing fairly well in Asia. They're doing okay here. Ford's doing really well in North America. I am not an automotive analyst. Okay, I hate cars. Okay, ask me about my bicycle. Ask me about my moto. Any motorheads in here follow the companies? Who thinks Ford's going to do really well?
GM.
How many people think GM's going to do really well? GM's gotten a lot of bad press, not many.
Yeah.
Well, you know, I don't know. I can't tell you. I know Ford is doing well here. Ford has no presence in Australia. Well, they have a little bit in Asia, not a whole lot. Their European group isn't doing too well. Turkey, they're doing pretty well. You see those Sprinter vans, those small vans that Ford sells? No, they're called Transit. Transit vans, anybody know about them? They look real European. They're small. They're on the small side. Not the car carriers. They're made in Turkey. They're made in Turkey. You know Turkey? Not that guy, Turkey. Turkey, where, you know, where Constantinople used to be, Istanbul. Anyway, okay. So, would you have had the gumption to buy Ford bonds? Yeah, maybe. How are they doing now? And now you got to look at, now Yahoo screws up, and so I went to FINRA, and FINRA's not as good looking, but there it is. And it shows that, yeah, they're still selling for pretty high prices, but then some of them, I don't understand this, I think some of these are stale quotes. It's hard to get good quotes. Anybody gets good quotes. And then there's a few other things for you to look at. Muni bonds from Gardena, from Puerto Rico, City of Carlsbad, Advanta. If something seems too good to be true, it usually is. AT&T. So check those out. Questions, thoughts, ideas, comments, criticisms, suggestions? The part of your assignment, actually your assignment, is to, for Chapter 9, is to go get quotes. Cool? You still awake? Ready to start chapter 10? No? Oh, well. You know what they say in Russia. Want to turn the lights on? Okay. Because we're ready to start chapter 10. Whoops. Here it is. And even though it seemed like this chapter 9 was kind of boring, It could have been a whole lot worse if we had gone into excruciating detail like the book does. So just make sure, if you do read the book and you do go to fall asleep, make sure you understand what's going on in the presentation. Is that a deal? Because you do have to understand these things, folks, or I'm going to look bad. They're going to say, where did you learn about bonds? And you're going to say, oh, Mr. Bond. And I'm going to say, oh.